to answer your question about faith, I don't mean to slight the religious angle in my answer. I, of course, am a Christian and attend church. I think pertinent here is the entire philosophy on Project Mercury, as expressed by Dr. Glennon the latter part of January, I believe, and possibly to rephrase his words a little. This project is not in direct technical competition with any other agency as we know it. The project is described to you people and to us is merely one step in the evolution of space travel. Along those lines, I would like to say that I think it's also pertinent to state that the risk, as you put it, is not as great as you possibly feel that it is. The program is designed as a step in the evolution of space travel, and as such, I'm sure the men connected with this project will not attempt space flight until we have reached the probability which has been set. The probability which has been set is higher, in other words, we have a better chance of coming back than we have, many of us here and our contemporaries have had, on routine test flights which we've made for the service. I would like to discount the fact that this project is extremely hazardous, and also to reiterate what Dr. Glennon has said, that it's not a technical race, it's a step in the evolution of space travel.
As far as my religious faith is concerned, I'm a Lutheran, and I wouldn't say I was overly religious. I go to church periodically. I'm like most of the other people, however, I don't feel that any particular extra faith is called for in this program over what we normally have. I've been flying in the Air Force for 17 years, and many people think that flying is somewhat hazardous. I don't. I've been test flying for the last 4 years, and many people think this is extra hazardous, and I don't think it's especially so. And to me, this is just a normal extension of flight. I see nothing about it that's any more hazardous than what I've been doing for the last 4 years especially.
Next question, Nat. Mr. Shepherd, your church affiliation, sir, if you care to say.
Yes, I'm not a member of any church. I attend the Christian Science Church regularly.
In the event one of the gentlemen was eliminated. The
question is, in the event that for any reason one of these gentlemen becomes eliminated from the program, will he be replaced? Bob? Not necessarily, and as I understand it, we don't think that it will be necessary.
So, if you got more work to do at Wright Patterson, this group will all be aligned.
The question is, do we have more work to do at Wright Patterson, or will all the work be done at Langley? If I might give the answer to that one, yes, indeed, we will be going back to Wright Patterson. We will be going to Johnsville, PA, where the Navy has a centrifuge. We may be going to a number of other service installations or medical facilities around the country. This is, in truth and in every possible way of saying it, a national program in which every resource of the nation in the areas required is being called upon.
Yes. Well, all their wives are going along with them now, they say. They told their wives, first reaction when they said they were going to volunteer.
The question is, or the observation, take your choice, while the wives of these seven men at the present time are all giving them support to the project, what about as the thing gets closer to the first orbital flight?
No, the first
would the gentlemen like to recall, if they can, their wives' first reaction to a hazardous undertaking?
They decided they wanted to volunteer.
When they decided they wanted to volunteer for this project. Let's start in the middle with Brother Grissom. He looks fat and happy at this point. Let him start.
Well, there was never any question in my mind about volunteering. It was just, could I get in on the program? But when I said something to my wife what she thought about my volunteering. She says, well, do you even have to ask? That's all I want to.
Well, to go way back when the first information of this program came out, when every one of us, you as well as us sitting right here, were ignorant about the whole thing, I can recall my own reaction, what a bunch of idiots. And my wife felt the same way. Now, this takes a little education. I had to be educated, too. I think that's what we're trying to do to you today, is to educate you to the fact that we're not playing games. This is serious business. And you can't just face up to this thing and say, we're going to, as Mr. Donlin said, put $1 million in a can and fire it into space. It's nothing like that at all. You don't make a program out of something as crude as that. This is a professional program. We're trying to do something with it. And most people who have asked me, why are you in this idiotic program? I immediately say, if you'll take a little bit of time to think about it, to study it, you realize that this is something that we're very serious about.
In answer to the question about my wife's original reaction, I believe I indicated earlier she was in complete support of my professional decision. She is now and has been at all times.
Personally, my wife isn't too concerned about what I do professionally. I think she's more concerned about whether she can find a babysitter and whether there's a commissary nearby to buy groceries and this sort of thing. And whether I'm in this program or running a filling station wouldn't concern her too much as long as we had everything else we needed.
Malcolm? My wife's enthusiasm has matched mine throughout the program. As a matter of fact, when I was notified that I was to be considered during the second and third phases of the competitive program, I was at sea at this time, and so my wife called Washington and volunteered for me.
Good show. Said I was at sea at the time, so my wife called Washington and volunteered for me.
What can I say after that one?
That's literally out
now, that's the best of the bunch. I've never had any problem so far as my wife going along with my career. My wife is also a pilot and is quite sympathetic to my desires on flying, and particularly to this program, quite enthusiastic.
My wife made a remark the other day, I've been out of this world for a long time, I might as well go on out there. I think all the wives, or at least my wife, when they first hear of something like this, they have reservations about it because they don't know anything about it. It's like all of us. We first hear of something like this, you're very interested, but you sure want to find out a lot more about it before you're willing to place your neck way out there. And I think that's the way all of us have been. I think probably what would best describe my wife's reaction has been that as she has learned more about the program, as I have gone through subsequent phases of it, and as she has learned more about it along with me, that she has become as enthusiastic about it as I am. I don't remember any deathless prose, though, as her initial reaction on this when we first started talking about it. It was one of those things that you just come home and start talking about like anything else.
Dr. Lovelace's work done, or will he continue in this program? If so, what will he continue doing?
The question is Dr. Lovelace's work done? And if the answer is no, it isn't, what will he be doing? I can tell you very quickly his work isn't done by a jugful, but perhaps Randy'd like to explore on that just a little bit.
We hope to continue to participate in the program. I might say that all our doctors and technicians are a little tired right at the moment, and we're going to let them take some time off. We won't do any of these tests to them again in the near future.
Careful.
Does NASA feel that one of these gentlemen here will be the first human being to go into orbit, or will the Russians feed us to it?
The question is, does NASA feel that one of these seven gentlemen will be the first to go into orbit, or will the Russians beat us to it? To answer that, I would like to quote in a general way comments made frequently both by Dr. Glennon and by Hugh L. Dryden, the Deputy Administrator of NASA, that we won't be at all surprised if the Russians get out there first, because they may well have started on their man in space project before we did. But if trying will have anything to do it, we'll get there just as quickly as anybody.
Well, can I add,
John?
Well, I think that everyone can understand my sort of, you might say, emotional attachment to the boys that we've been working with. I think it is quite possible that the Russians have us beat in terms of propulsion. But I'll maintain and give them cards and spades that the quality of our human component will be far superior than theirs, and we'll learn more from our first manned flights than they will from theirs.
Thank you very much, Tom. Could you break that down in about one or two questions instead of an afternoon's worth?
Well, this is the first step.
This is indeed the first step.
Is the second step to involve one man?
We don't know yet. It's in the planning stage. Well, the question is, will the second step after Project Mercury involve more than one man? And the answer is we don't know yet, but for sure the second or third or fourth step will involve more than one man.
I have a question about physical requirements. Is the most important thing the stamina to withstand an immediate shock, or the endurance to withstand a long, grueling strain?
The question is about physical requirements. Is it stamina to endure a long, grueling strain, or is it stamina to endure a shock? And Captain Barrick, General Flickinger, and Dr. Lovelace, you can flip coins on that one.
Well, I feel that the problem will be one of multiple stresses, and I think Captain Barr and General Flickinger feel the same way. And the way the program is set up, I feel that every man here can withstand the stresses to which they will be subjected. I forgot one thing when you asked if we were going to follow along in the program. There will be a major.
Quiet, please.
There will be a Major Bill Douglas, a flight surgeon, as I understand, that will be with the men all the time. And there have already been some fellows down at Langley Field with them that have participated in the program to a very marked extent.
I don't know what that means. Does that mean by stresses you mean long time endurance or a momentary shock?
Well, I'll try to be as specific as I can with you and willing to get into specifics if you want to take the time. Really, if I can give you this picture, we start out with as you already know, with the extremely detailed clinical examination, perhaps the most exhaustive that has ever been devised. Then we go from that to, as I say, this battery of what we call simulated space stresses. This is the full spectrum of them. Isolation, confinement, the dynamic forces as a part of the vehicular expenditure of any energy to get into orbit, and the destruction of that energy to get back into land. Now, it just so turns out that when you pick people with, you might say, a superior foundation physically with a good, mature psychological approach to hazardous and new types of experiences, that by and large you will find that for any individual stress, whether it be an impact force of 50 G's for a short period of time or a prolonged exposure of, say, 6 to 8 to 10 G's for the reentry pattern, that by and large this individual will react favorably to all of these stresses, both individually and combined. And this is what these candidates proved in the stress tests. Does that answer your question?
I'd like to ask Dr. Flechinger if...
Thank you.
If the doctors find any particular pep pills or injections or anything they can give them before they go up to take along, sustain them in combat is the key.
The question is, will pep pills or other means be used to keep these boys at maximum alertness throughout their orbital flight? And the question was addressed to General Flechinger.
Specifically, no, we won't resort to any pep pills. They certainly will be trained on all of what you might say ordinary medical emergencies that might occur to them, either as a result of vehicular failure, component failure, or some intercurrent acute happening to themselves. But we have definitely proven in the work that we've done on ground simulators that for the duration of the mission that they are expected to perform, we will have no need to have artificial stimulation. They have their own built-in governing factor, which is quite adequate.
Henry?
Walter, you've been talking about orbital flight. Do you have any idea of when you might be ready to begin manned flights and ballistic missiles over less than orbital range?
The question is that we've been talking about orbital flight. How soon earlier than that will we be shooting them in their capsules over a ballistic trajectory? Before we answer that, might I urge you gentlemen to, after the answer to this question, insofar as possible, to stick to the questions about the men themselves, because they have other things to do later in the day, and while they want to be thoroughly responsive, they don't want to stay here all afternoon. Bob, would you like to answer that?
Walter Bonney's already quoted Glennon as saying this might come off, the orbital phase might come off sometime after 2 years. The suborbital flights are a prelude to the orbital ones. We're going to get them as soon as we can. However, as I said earlier, we have all these systems to translate into hardware and to check out. So any kind of an exact estimate can't be given, except they'll definitely come before the orbital flights.
John Finney?
Walter, we've heard a lot about these men's physical capability. I wonder if Dr. Flechinger or Captain Barr and Dr. Lovelace can give us any idea what kind of IQs do they have.
The question is, we know they're physically darn near perfect. What about their IQs? Which one of you, gentlemen? Don?
That's easy, Walt. I can tell you this, that every one of the gentlemen have IQs about 10% higher than any of us. they're
I could say a lot higher than 10%, but...
They're
very dumb anyway.
Well, me too, so we have a lot in common. But they're all above normal. Yes.
Can you give any number bracket range?
Come on. All above 120.
All over 130.
I would say yes. Which is way
Let's
high. 100 percentile.
Let's get a lady question now.
Would the gentleman mind telling us which one of the tests felt the hardest?
The question is, would the gentleman I like to... say which test they like least. I'm in on a secret, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll say the next but one, because they're all agreeing on one. Johnny Glenn, you answer, and then we'll start this way and around that way.
That's a real tough one, because we had some pretty good tests, but I think the test out of Dr. Lovelace's place at Albuquerque out there, certainly some of the tests we had out there were the most trying, and it's rather difficult to pick one, because if you figure how many openings there are on the human body and how far you can go in any one of them,
you gave it away.
now you answer which one would be the toughest for you.
Thank you. Right.
I think he's answered for all of us.
Yeah. That was the toughest one for me.
Well, I think it would be very difficult to pick anyone. I think he answered it very well there.
They're all of many different types. I believe that the ones that involved extended effort, like the treadmill and the bicycle, are certainly the most fatiguing.
Well, I'll switch directions from John. The one I had the most difficulty with was swallowing that rubber tube for the stomach, whatever they're doing down there. Swallowing a rubber tube for gastric analysis, I believe it is.
Well, I think John Glenn answered the question pretty well. Perhaps carried a little bit further. The tests at the Loveless Clinic and also those in Dayton actually complemented each other. And almost every test they devised was strenuous in one way or another. Although, at that particular time, of course, they were administered separately.
I have nothing to add to the test. I think the stresses are part of it, but John Glenn's covered it too well for me to add to it.
Well, it's been covered quite well, but to me, I think this is the worst here.
Well, could we have the present home address of these men?
Could we get the present home addresses of the gentlemen? We start with Carpenter, please.
11911 Timmy Lane in Garden Grove, California. 11911 Timmy Lane, Garden Grove, California.
I think all these addresses are in those folders.
I think if you read them carefully, you'll find them all, but let's go through to make sure.
Well, we're in the process of moving right now. My address has been at Edwards Air Force Base, but shortly after this, it will be down at Langley.
My home was originally in New Concord, Ohio, and right now I'm at 3683 North Harrison Street over here in Arlington, Virginia.
Presently, my home is 280 Green Valley Drive, Enon, Ohio. Was 280 Green Valley Drive, Enon, Ohio.
None
backwards.
What's the city?
Enon.
None spelled backwards.
I am presently stationed at the Naval Air Test Center, Patuxent River, Maryland. I am in quarters there. Not for much longer.
On the base?
On the base at the test center, yes.
My family and I are presently residing at 109 Brandon Road in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
I'm at Edwards Air Force Base, California, Flight Test Center, 1201 Community Road.
We have the last one. Please get Walter.
Edwards Air Force Base, 1201 Community Road.
Community?
Community, check.
Community Road is what?
This is sort of a double question.
Well, can you make it one and then come back?
Well, I'm just curious in the sense of the astronauts. Did they ever entertain any ideas scientifically before they went flying? And while they were flying, did they ever say to themselves that they themselves would like someday to make the first day of flight into space?
The question is, did these gentlemen ever think about flying into space before the announcement of Project Mercury was made? Is this basically the question? Would you mind starting and we'll work down?
Well, yes, sir. I certainly did. Being out at the Flight Test Center, we have quite a few experimental programs going. The last one, of course, is the X-15, and we've had a few writers out there periodically, and Martin Caden was there about 3 months ago and asked me that specific question, and this was before I ever heard of Project Mercury, and I gave him answer, I'd give my left arm to be the first man in space at that time. That's the best way I can answer it.
Could you give that over? I don't think it gets through to the people.
Okay, you can read it now? Okay. I've been at the Flight Test Center for the last 4 years, and we have numerous writers out there off and on interviewing X-15 pilots and so forth. And the last time Martin Kaden was out there, which was about 3 to 4 months ago, he asked me this same question as to whether I would like to be the first man in space. And this was before I'd ever heard of Project Mercury, of course. And I told him at that time that I would give my left arm to be the first man in space. I think that's the best way I can answer your question.
In answer to the question, from my particular case, the answer is definitely yes. I have been following the developments as closely as I can from my present duty outside of the program. And I think that all of us here, being technically minded and having had the flight test experience, have thought about it. I don't think there's any question but what we all have thought about space flight. I think that I was enthusiastic about the program from the start. I enthusiastically volunteered. I had no difficulty in making my decision. It took no time whatsoever once they asked me to participate in the elimination program. Yes, I had been following it before. Oh, I misunderstood you. I'm sorry. I think very definitely. All of us have been involved in programs similar to this. This isn't anything different.
I think I can answer that simply. all of us in this room probably have read comic strips such as Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, Jules Verne routines. And if we had interest in reading things like this, obviously we had intentions of following something like this in our lifetimes. I will readily admit that I didn't think it was coming this soon. But in flying aircraft, we've been striving to get higher and higher. You've heard of releases on airplanes such as the Lockheed 104 and the Navy Grumman F-11F that have gone to quite high altitudes. Space, to any one of us, really begins at about 22 to 25,000. At 22 to 25,000 feet, we can't live without survival equipment. So we really are in space. We've been flying in space as far as our environment goes for many years. But as far as going higher, that's just one more step.
I'm just going to say yes, and for a long time, I've been much interested.
I've been much interested for a long time, too. I think of a specific example, though, in direct answer to your question of where I really felt this desire or this inclination to really get into space flight. We did considerable work, or we're doing some work, when I was back at the test center at Patuxent down here, Naval Air Test Center, on Zoom flight work, where you're getting up all the speed you can and trying to optimize the your flight path for getting the maximum altitude out of an airplane on the zoom climb. And on that, I don't think I ever made a zoom climb on the airplane, and I didn't have a feeling of, boy, if I just had some more power to bloop this thing on out a little bit. Though I think to give you a specific answer on a period like that is when I have really, really felt I would want to go on out, and I've been interested in it for a long time.
Yes, I have too. I've entertained thoughts for some years of possibilities of space flight.
Yes and yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the hour is drawing along. If it's all right with you from here on out, rather than asking all seven each to answer the question, I think it's becoming pretty apparent that they already are thinking and acting like a team and as a group rather than as individuals. We don't want to shortchange any of you. We want to answer all of the questions you have, but we do want to make it fairly rapid.
Walt, I'd like to direct a question to Colonel Glenn. On your 57 transcontinental flight, do I understand correctly that was the first supersonic transcontinental flight?
The question to Colonel Glenn was his transcontinental flight the first supersonic transcontinental flight?
Yes, that's right. We averaged supersonic speeds for the flight level we were flying at for the whole trip, including the refuelings and everything. Totally elapsed time for the whole trip. That's correct.
How long during the lady in the air on their
How long a period will they be in the air or in space and during the first orbital flight? As I understand, it'll be 2 to 3 orbits, and it'll be about 180 minutes for each orbit, so 2 or 3 times 180 minutes. 90 minutes, I'm sorry, 90 minutes in an orbit, so it'll be 2 or 3 times 90 minutes. Ed?
These men were selected from some 32 others by a series of psychological tests. Weren't they given psychological tests?
Yeah. Well, ask the question and then we'll get it answered one way or another.
I was wondering what they were looking for, what kind of a man they were looking for, and how these men were picked from.
Looking for in this area. Randy or Don, do you want to answer that?
Well, sure, I'll try it, Walt, try anything. Maybe it'd be easier to do it this way. There were, you might say, 3 teams of us. And as was mentioned early, we all operated from numbers. Right up through until the final get-together. And these 3 teams were, first of all, the educational, engineering, professional background. This was a function of the task force group under Bob Gilruth and some of the staff members here at NASA. Then there was the clinical group under Dr. Lovelace and Dr. Schwickenberg and the staff, and they operated more or less within the confines of clinical evaluation. And then there was our group at the AeroMed Lab on the multiple stress tests. Now, contained in the initial screening, of course, were some arbitrary criteria that had to do with their educational background, their height and age, which the height was governed largely by the dimensions within the capsule. There were certain preliminary, might say psychologic or intelligent screening tests, and certain medical history background that was developed at the initial screening level, prior to the selection of the initial group to start through the actual clinical and stress phases. Have I answered your question? Which weight was given to each one?
Peter?
I think it was General Flickinger, but it might have been one of the others, who said that between now and when they're ready to come to the field, we'll have some time for indoctrination. And it came right after a smoke.
I believe it was answered that there would be time for a period of indoctrination. You could have read it, I guess, an implication that someone would have to learn how to do without it. Peter Hackis now asks, will they or won't they? And regardless of what that answer is, can they take a drink? Randy?
I didn't mean that they would have to give up smoking. They're still mighty good friends of mine, I hope. And certainly it would be perfectly all right if they so desired to take a drink or two.
Walt, which of the men comes closest to the 5 feet 11 inch ceiling on height?
I think you'll find again in the biog that their heights are given. Okay.
I'd like to ask Dr. General Quickenham.
Yes, ma'am.
How did you eliminate the man who had almost
everybody's wives? I'm sorry, ma'am.
The question was, how did we eliminate a man with unsympathetic wives? And the answer to that, I can give it, is that they didn't volunteer.
That'll do it.